Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of the No Frills Teacher Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Camps, and tonight's episode is The Valley of Despair and Other Spooky Stories of the Classroom. And what's special about tonight's episode is that this is my first official live stream where I have an open invitation for other educators and professionals to call in, join this episode tonight of the podcast, and share their own stories of the classroom, from silly to just straight up horrific. And really the goal of this episode is not to scare people away, although it is the Halloween season. It's simply to share the struggles and the obstacles that we as educators face day in and day out, and hopefully inspire others and show that through determination, support, and perseverance, you can overcome these challenges. And I know there are many out there right now, especially in the education profession, that are wanting to give up, that are willing to give up, and quite understandably so. And it is my goal, and hopefully the goal of those who share their experiences and their stories this evening, that we inspire other people and let you know that you are not alone. Don't give up. And we are here to support you and keep doing what you're doing and keep grinding, because you make a difference. You make a difference in the profession of education, and you make a difference in the lives of those students that you interact with on a daily basis. So the Valley of Despair is really a term that's used, especially when we're talking about the survival of the first year of teaching, where you go through many different stages. Those who work with instructional coaches and professional development departments in their school district, wherever they may work. And sometimes this term comes up. Jim Knight has referenced it as well in his work, if you're familiar with the work of Jim Knight, the Valley of Despair. And it's that feeling of hopelessness. It's that feeling of being overwhelmed, and where you feel like no matter what you do, it's never going to be enough. It's never going to be good enough. And you're going to have no choice, really, where it's going to be, you're going to get burnt out, honestly, and or you already are burnt out, and there's just no coming back from it. And that's where that despair part comes in. And depending on the support that you receive from your administrator or your support staff or your school district, sometimes it doesn't feel like it's enough. And that's where that phrase, the Valley of Despair, comes from. And hopefully those of you who are currently living in that Valley of Despair, know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Know that you can move beyond that valley and you can reach the mountaintop of success, and you will get there. It's a long journey, but it is a worthwhile journey. So don't hang up, don't give up, and know that once again, you matter and you make a difference. So I'm looking over here at the switchboard, and I do actually see that we have somebody who is joining us right now. Let me see if we could get our follower to participate. Okay, let's see. We have Melissa, and let's see if I could get Melissa to join us. Okay, so as I was saying, this is our first time doing a live stream with people joining us, so I apologize if it's a little bit of a hot mess. But once again, we are called the No Frills Teacher Podcast for a reason. than literally just sitting here on my smartphone recording in Podbean. But with that being said, I do see that Melissa is now officially with us. And Melissa, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Melissa was a previous guest on the No Frills Teacher podcast talking about classroom transformations, and that was back in season one. Melissa is a 2021 Foundation for Lee County Public Schools Golden Apple recipient and a current fourth grade teacher in the school district of Lee County. But Melissa, besides all that, give people a little bit of background there once again if they didn't hear, the episode from season one on classroom transformations. This is all about the Valley of Despair and other spooky stories of the classroom. And please share with us, what kind of spooky story do you have tonight?
I was trying to really think about the different things that have happened throughout my career, and I think that there, in the beginning of my career, and it hasn't really been that long, I changed careers when I already was a mom, so it's my second career being a teacher. But when I first started, my very first year, my class, I took over a class halfway through the year, and the teacher that I took over the class from, she left teaching altogether. So she took off and went to the other side of the world, actually. I think she couldn't have moved farther from teaching when I took over, and she really hadn't been a teacher for that long. And when I finished my first week and I was into my second week of that at that school, a fifth grade teacher walked by me and she was like, "Thank you for staying." And I was like, I kind of looked at her and I was like, "What does that mean? I don't know what that means," And I mean, that particular class, there was a lot that I experienced, and it was kind of like a throw to the wolves kind of situation, but I felt like it made me stronger. But I had shoes thrown at me and scissors, coming out my legs. And I taught kindergarten at the time, so they're on the floor. So scissors coming at my ankles. And I had one student who actually came into school and she was hallucinating. And I didn't know what to do. I called the
Oh,
office and I was
wow.
like, yeah, she thought there was a mouse. And she was five, so she was like, "There's mices in me," and but she thought there was a mouse crawling out of her clothes. And then she turned around and thought there was a rabbit jumping across my floor in my classroom. So I called the front office, and like I said, I had literally only been teaching in, out of internship for a couple of months at this point. It was closer to the end of the year. And I called the office and I was like, "I don't know what to do. What do I do? I feel like she needs something, somebody more than me." And nobody came right into my classroom. So I was
Oh,
like,
of course, why
what do
would
I
they?
do? Yeah, I mean, I was in shock. So I called the office again and I was like, "I think we need to call 911. I'm telling you, she's hallucinating. She thinks there's stuff crawling out of her clothes. Like, somebody needs to call right now." And so I think when I said that, a phone call was made, but still nobody came running to my classroom. I was still a little baffled that I didn't have people coming to my classroom to come and help this little girl. And then finally, when the ambulance got there, they did come to my classroom. So they did, and the ambulance was pretty obviously quick to respond. So it was within a few minutes after I got off the phone. And they didn't end up Baker acting the child. The parent actually came to pick her up. And I never got to know what the full story was of what happened, but that was a little scary as a first year teacher, a couple months into teaching. So yeah,
Well, I would
that was
say
my.
so. That's next level.
Yeah, it was a little crazy. So, I mean, but I didn't walk away. I mean, I felt like, yeah, it was crazy. It was hard, but I got through it. I don't know. I guess maybe I was just more in shock. I didn't know how to react to it. So,
Oh, I don't think that Harry Wong covers that in his book.
no, I don't think anybody does. There is so much about our profession that's not covered in a book because, we can't really go by the book in our classroom because you never know. Every group of kid is different. every kid individually is different. They may have, a diagnosis the same as another kid, but they don't handle it the same way. They may have no diagnosis and be a normal kid, but the way they're raised at home and the way another kid is raised at home, they're not going to behave the same in the classroom. And that's, on a positive side, but also on the negative side. So it's not always just the negative behaviors. It's the positive behaviors too. You just never know what you're going to get. We kind of, especially as public school teachers, we get this, I had an assistant principal say this to me one time. She goes, we get a bag of grapes and we have to work with what we've got. We can't toss any out. We have to serve them all. And it's
no matter how bad you want to stomp on those grapes and make some wine.
Yes. Right. That's in public education, that's what we're dealt. And we have those cards and we have to work with them. We don't get another hand for that year,
So what advice would you give, once again, people listening to this episode and they're saying, I just cannot do it anymore. And it's only October and it's, not even mid-October yet. And it's a long, long school year. And we have teachers leaving in droves. That's common knowledge.
Right?
People know that, which is unfortunate and a whole nother, episode for that. But what advice would you give those that are out there that are just, hanging on by a thread, ready to give up, but they quite can't make that commitment to leave the profession? But they're burnt out and it's not even mid-October.
Yeah, I mean, I think the same thing that I just said about, the kids, I think even as adults, I can give all the advice I can give in the world, but there's only going to be certain things that resonate with certain people, and how they process things and how they handle things are going to be different than how I do. And so my biggest encouragement is to have a buddy. I mean, I have multiple buddies and I have multiple buddy groups, and you know that, because yep. You're one of my buddies. You're in one of my buddy groups.
I am honored.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to have, you have to find the people that support you and that fill you up. Because our profession is so hard. And I know I was telling you this before. I had a class, it seems like more classes nowadays, we have more behavioral issues, and I'm not really sure why. This is my 10th year in the classroom. And it seems like the last couple of years have been there have been more behavioral struggles and more intense behavioral struggles than I had ever seen in my first, probably 6 years teaching. But I did have a class within one of those first 6 years teaching where I had a student that was throwing chairs and flipping desks and throwing learning utensils. And this is only my second year in fourth grade, so I historically have always taught kindergarten. And so in a kindergarten class, you have little five-year-olds in that class. Sometimes they come in at four and you have somebody throwing stuff. I mean, that's frightening for them. It's not like being in fourth grade when somebody throws something and they kind of know how to, protect themselves a little bit more,
And no, no one of those
they
little kids.
They don't understand that. Yeah. And so that was a little scary. And for that particular student, I just continued to push building a relationship with him. And I know that I hear people say that all the time. You have to build relationships. And guess what? As much as it worked for me with that student, it doesn't work for every student. And, we're not going to be able to meet every kid. And so if it's not me that can connect with that kid, it needs to be somebody else. And so that's why, sometimes you'll see in education people change, there's classroom changes, because sometimes it does take a different adult, and you have to be okay in your heart with knowing it wasn't you, it was just that you and that particular student didn't connect, and it's okay to move that kid to another person that maybe they can connect with to help them be successful. And so I think a lot of our profession is teachers want to take everything to heart, the good, the bad, the ugly. And we take it so much to heart because our profession is literally coming from our heart. We are there because we love kids. We are there because we want to help kids. Like it is a heart job more than it is anything else. And so everything that we do, we always take to heart. And if we aren't filling our heart back up, you know, with our buddies and with our team of people who can help fill some of those when we feel depleted, you know, we're not going to be successful with our kids in the classroom, and we're not going to be successful with wanting to stay in the classroom because we don't have anything filling us up. It's only depleting us. So,
absolutely.
All that to say, the buddy is the best advice I can give, I think.
It really is. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, because if you don't have a buddy per se, then sometimes it's hard for people to relate to what you're going through. And, mm-hmm. you know, you could be fortunate and be married to a teacher. Like, you know, personally, you know, my wife is an educator, so she gets it in a way. You know, right. We kind of have similar experiences with what we had, you know, throughout our careers. But sometimes you can have the most wonderful, supportive spouse in the world who's a non-educator, but nobody truly gets it, I feel, like a fellow teacher. And
right.
That's just my opinion. You know, I could be wrong. I'm not saying there are husbands and wives out there that don't. But, you know, I've also had friends where it's like, oh, great. The worst thing that they hate doing is going out to have dinner with a group of friends. And you see, you know, the partners sitting around. Like, oh, great. They're going to talk shop again. They're going to talk about work again. And they just like, they're smiling and they're nodding and they're listening and all that stuff. But it's like, oh, really? Got to talk about teaching? Got to talk about school right now? Then you talk about school all day with your friends. So.
You've been observing my husband at all of our events, haven't you?
I have. Yes, this is true. Yes.
I mean, and you're right. It is like my husband is very supportive of my job. He knows that I have a passion for teaching. He was actually just telling me this weekend, we were arguing about how much money he thinks I actually spend on my classroom. And I was like, no, I don't spend that much. And he's like, Melissa, hold the phone. Let me go write down all your receipts. And, you know, and but he jokes about it. And obviously he doesn't tell me I can't spend. He doesn't tell me to slow down, but if he's a wise man, he won't. Yeah, exactly, right? But at the same time, you know, he doesn't get it that, and he'll acknowledge it, but he doesn't get it that my brain never shuts off of teaching. Everywhere I go and everything I do, it's somehow I tie it back to teaching. You know, this weekend my husband and I took our oldest daughter to Hallis Scream. And on the way to Hallis Scream, I am messaging parents because I'm trying to work on the St. Augustine trip that's happening in January. And I'm, you know, messaging parents, and it was something that could not wait. Like, I cannot wait until Monday to handle that. I had to work on that in that moment. And he's like, do you ever stop teaching? And that's not something that's necessarily my classroom, because it's a grade level club, but it's somehow everything is always really related to teaching. I came home from the store, from the dollar store, and I'm carrying some stuff. I walk in the door and I have these like plastic bones, and my oldest daughter turns on, she goes with this like face of like, I know what they're for, but she says, what are those bones for? And instead of saying, oh, they're Halloween decorations for our house, I look at her and I go, I'm thinking I might do a Flintstones transformation again, you know, like the most random things, but it's constant, you know, and, you know, I think every teacher's like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, kind of tying it all back into the, you know, the topic of tonight's episode and talking about having like a buddy or support system, I think that is important, not only to get through this valley of despair, as you know, I have been calling it, which unfortunately I wasn't clever enough to coin that phrase. Somebody more, you know, intelligent, I'd hate to say that, or more insightful and more experienced came up with that. And like I said, it's been thrown around like through Jim Knight and instructional coaching and all the impact cycle and other things throughout, you know, supporting new educators to the profession. But finding that support system, finding that buddy, and also like we're kind of joking about, you know, in this episode, joking around, finding the humor in things, I feel is so important, and sometimes you can't find the humor or the lightheartedness in a situation when you're in the thick of it. But perhaps being with another coworker or a colleague or a friend who can listen to you, and maybe if you kind of can find something light in the situation or find a little bit of humor into it, I feel like that eases the stress. So I'm not saying that's going to always happen for everybody, because everyone's situation is obviously different and unique. I understand that. But I do feel sometimes we gotta find, I keep saying humor, but really that's what it comes down to, just find something to kind of take less focus off of the negatives and try to think about some of the positives, if there's any, and really get through that together with somebody else.
That it is. It's great. I know a lot of our meetings that we have at our school, that our principal always starts off with, "Are there any celebrations?" And I used to be like, "Oh, okay," but in these days, education is, it's rough right now, and I don't care what state you're in. It's rough everywhere. It's not one versus another, and the laws and the legislature that's changing is, a part of it, but it's not just that. It is everywhere. But now I think about those celebrations and I'm like, that actually is a really good thing right now for us. Before I used to kind of take it for granted, like, because I was in happy go land. I don't know. I guess I was just, and I, but now it does feel like the problems are starting to arise or things are being brought, to more attention in the last couple of years than before, that it's important to hear what the celebrations are, because maybe you had a bad day, but I didn't, and I can share my celebration, but it's a celebration that you may have experienced at some point in your teaching career that's going to just lift you up and say, "Ah, yes, I've had that before too," and it might not have been today, but I can have it again. I've felt that before, and that's what kept me then. So I know I can feel it again. If you're feeling it today, I know I can feel it again, and that can keep me here too.
And I definitely, have to say how powerful it is to have a grade level or a team that you work with where there's cohesiveness and you support one another. I know also that what could really drive somebody away from the profession is toxicity within a grade level or a team. And there might be some people that are listening to this episode or will listen to it, the next few days and nod in agreement or say, I know what that's all about. And when you have some sort of peer conflict, if you will, with a teammate or a team member, that can really sour things too, because you don't want to then participate as a team within a PLC. Collaboration goes out the window. And so it really is important to try to
Absolutely.
be part of a strong, have a strong team, or be open to new team members, new ideas as well. Let us be set in our ways, and if they are successful. I know personally there were times earlier in my career where I was ready to leave. In fact, I did have a break in service. My very first 3 years of teaching, a small little, window. And if it were not for the strength of my team and my colleagues, who really many of them became close personal friends, which I consider family to this day. Some even, flew to Michigan to attend my wedding. From Florida, because we were that close, they were the ones who pulled me through the tough times early in my career, especially as a new educator. And I just didn't know what I didn't know. And I stumbled and I fell. And I almost didn't make it as an educator had not been for my colleagues who reached out and pulled me up and just kind of got me through those hard times in those first, 3 years, 4 years of teaching to allow me to be
Which
the educator
are the
that I am
hardest.
today. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and those are the hardest. I mean, the statistics show how many teachers we lose within those first 5 years of teaching. So, yeah.
It's
those
true.
Are the hardest years to really make those connections to, because you are the newbie. And so I do feel for new teachers too. Like, I feel for new teachers that come in and they try to find their footing. And if they have a team, like you said, that's kind of toxic and not open to, hearing their ideas or accepting them as who they are and finding a way to mesh with them and, really trying to help them to fit in, that could be a reason why they feel pushed out as well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we had somebody just call in and just drop. So I'm going to go ahead and check and see how it was. He's like, whoops, I'm in the middle of this conversation. I'm going to dip out. That's too funny. So here's another horror story while we wait and see if our caller calls back in. The not just the emotional stress, and it, sometimes it's the physical stress that you endure as well. Like, and I'm talking about physical altercations with students. For example, talking about, spooky stories, horror stories in the classroom. I remember when this was more than 6 years ago, I'd say 7 years ago, that I had a student actually remove a fire extinguisher off the wall in the hallway and throw it at me. And
wow.
And when I told people the story, they were like, what? How does that even happen? So I had to literally duck, like dodge. It was like the 5 D's of dodgeball to not get hit with a fire extinguisher. And I'm like, I didn't sign up for this. And how do you respond to that? Obviously I was teach certified, and all those things, which if you don't know what that is, it's being able to, safely, remove or de-escalate a situation, if a student becomes physical or aggressive. But those are once again things that you don't learn, they don't teach you in the College of Education how to dodge a fire extinguisher, or what to do if a student's standing on top of the desk and they're throwing scissors at you or the classmates and you have to remove everyone from the classroom. So I feel like not only are teachers emotionally drained, sometimes teachers are, being physically, attacked, really. And how do you, what do you say to somebody? What do you say to a new teacher or even a veteran teacher that's like, I have a student that's kicking me or, throwing objects at me or, my class, the students in my classroom. And once again, people might be listening to this episode like, yeah, I've been through that. And that doesn't make it right or okay. And we have to understand that, a child's intent doesn't mean that they're purposely trying to harm. Maybe they are for whatever reason, but, at the face value, kids or, kids, and there's that innocence, with it, but sometimes they are beyond, these big feelings and these big emotions, or they don't have the proper, tools or techniques to de-escalate and calm down. But what do you say to a teacher like that, who is, physically, hit or assaulted by a student, and then they're like, nope, not for me. I'm going to do this profession now. Not worth it. Do you encourage that person to continue and see it through? What would you do in that situation?
Well, what did you do? Let me flip that to you, since it was a situation that you were put in. Like, what did you do, and what would you say, to a person that may have experienced that?
So
after your experience.
So after my experience, and that's a great question. Really, you should be the host of this podcast. So after that situation, I did, although I was trained to, properly de-escalate a situation with no student that was aggressive, I was honestly in a little bit of shell shock that by that time I was able to radio for my principal and my assistant principal to join me in the hallway where this was happening, where where I responded to the student, you know, having, you know, a crisis really. And they were able to properly, you know, safely restrain within, you know, what they're allowed to do. This student told the student was able to calm down and then have the student, you know, picked up by their parent. So, but then I was lucky in that case because I could have gotten hurt, you know, very badly, or the student could have hurt themselves or somebody else, you know, very badly. And it could have been way worse than it was. It was bad, don't get me wrong. But had I not been fortunate enough to have, you know, backup, if you will, with the administrators, that could have been a different story. But I will tell you this, it definitely discouraged me from continuing to work in high need schools where many issues, you know, that had arise, you know, were due to students, you know, having bouts of aggression. And I feel like it does drive away, you know, sometimes, and I'm not calling myself a quality teacher. I'm just saying that sometimes experienced teachers or, you know, quality teacher, educators, whatever you want to label them as, it drives them away. And then it's just this vicious cycle of a school constantly. It's a revolving door of staff turnover because you're losing the quote unquote good teachers or the veteran teachers or the experienced teachers, whatever it may be. And the school never improves because you're on constant turnover. And because teachers just don't want to go to work and get hit all day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to be a teacher in general, it does take a special kind of person to come into a classroom every day and do what we do with the number of kids that we have. And especially since in our county, we are so overfilled with students that we will never, I feel like, and maybe, you know, it is my dream that we can be able to adhere to the proper classroom sizes, but I don't see that ever being something that happens in our foreseeable future here. So we will always be over our classroom, you know, the standard classroom size. And so to come into the classroom and have the number of students that we do in our classroom, I do feel like teaching is, it is a calling, and it does take a special person to be in that classroom. But it also, like you said, it takes an even more special person to be able to serve in some of those hard to staff schools. And I am grateful for every single teacher that fills those spots at, you know, those schools that are harder to staff and that do have more students with those tendencies or that struggle with, you know, their with anger or whatever it is that they're struggling with that causes them to react in the way that they do. Sometimes it's just their family life, and they just honestly don't know any different of how to react because that is their reality when they go home. And it's so sad, and it's so, you know, it's so hard for us to see if that is not our reality. It's so hard for us to put ourselves in their shoes and understand what they go through, and the way that they respond. But I am so thankful for every teacher that is able to go to work every day and be there and support those kids because they need teachers like that. And you know, there may be a time in my life that I can be there and do that. It's not a time right now for me. I couldn't be at a school like that and be in fear that something happens to me because I have children to come home to. And I know that there's teachers out there that might hear that and they might, you know, be offended by me saying that, but you know, I do have to think about my safety because I have children that rely on me to come home every day, and I can't have something thrown at my head or thrown at my body, or, you know, I can't go through that every day, you know, wondering if I'm gonna come home. But that is a reality for some teachers, is they go to school and they aren't sure what is going to happen in the school that day. And it may not be something so drastic as far as whether or not they're gonna come home or not, but it is drastic enough if they're gonna, you know, be in a situation where they're physically harmed that makes it hard for them to come to work the next day. You know, and so I'm thankful for them because there's a place for every kind of teacher, and if we didn't have the kind of teachers that were able to fill those positions, we would be in an even worse spot than we are right now with our teacher shortages all over the place. So
I have to say that it's, you know, it's as somebody who had experience that, working at various Title I schools, DA schools, if you're not familiar with, like, lowest 300 in the state, usually, unfortunately, discipline issues go hand in hand with low performing academics. And you're not always getting the parental support, or like you said, the students just don't know, how to de-escalate, or to calm down, because whatever environmental, whatever it may be, who knows? I'm not trying to make like excuses. I do know that there are times that I had colleagues where they had to miss work because, they were, hurt or unable to use,
right,
had bruising or whatever it may be. And like I said, the following year, staff turnover, and the school can never really gain its, footing. And not saying it's like that now, I'm talking about years ago, it's, 6, 7 years ago, but it is something that is a reality that people don't always think about. So when public perception of educators are that teachers are whining and complaining about pay and this and that, yeah, you don't, unless you're in the trenches, so to speak, you don't really understand what an educator might be going through, both mentally and physically. So when you hear on the news teachers saying, we deserve a livable wage, a pay increase, of the fat, there are many things behind the scenes that people don't understand or know what is really happening unless you work within the school, and see this on a day in and day out basis.
Right.
But, also hope, right? Things can improve, things will improve. And we do need these great teachers, and especially the next generation of educators, these, the graduating classes, from the College of Education, wherever universities they come from, and want to be in this profession and to make this profession thrive and survive, really. And what I hope those that are listening out there on this, to this podcast, know that although we're talking about and we're being real, like right now I'm being very honest and open, and I know you have been, you are too, and others out there, that although there are these instances that are not ideal or could be a little bit intimidating or even a little bit, scary, threatening, whatever it may be, or discouraging, the good in the profession outweighs all those negatives, the bad, tenfold, where the small percentage of these instances that do occur, those can be remedied through support with proper administrators and protocol and school culture and the service that we do for our students and for the public far outweighs these instances that can occur. I think so.
I agree. Yeah.
So that is it. It looks like good news. You are my only guest, and that is okay, because this is the first time we're doing a live stream instead of just a pre-recorded episode. And I'm really excited. I do know that I do have some people I see over here on the switchboard, because it's fancy now. I do see on my switchboard that I do have, listeners that are listening in on this episode. So if you're out there listening to Melissa and I talk about the Valley of the Spirit and other spooky stories of the classroom, thank you for joining us. I know some people are listening and not really ready to share or unable to share for whatever reason, and that's totally cool too. But I do see you out there listening.